Okay. Yeah, so this is a class continuing the question of enjoying life. Chas v'shalom, enjoying life, because life is a much greater thing than this. But about the specific kind of pleasures having to do with bodily pleasures, which the virtue called temperance deals with. According to Rav Aristotle, according to other rabbis, temperance is a broader thing, as we have discussed in earlier classes, did we? Yeah? So, what we have to get at is just this clarity of very specifically which exact kind of pleasures this temperance is about. Because that's like the whole methodology here is doing these very precise cuts within the area, within the matter of what we're talking about. So know exactly what kind of thing temperance is concerned with, and then what kind of thing temperance is, and therefore we'll understand correctly, since we already know that all virtues are a median, a correct path between, or there are always the too much and the too little, the excess and the shortfall. So if we will understand what this is about and what it is, we'll be able to define exactly what the excess in it is and what the shortfall in it is and what the correct one, the correct middle path in it is. And as I think I've explained, this kind of precision helps us, I think, do the kind of work. Maybe I'll think about like this. It helps us do the kind of work that relates to this specific thing. Because you remember, you get what I'm saying? Remember that the big deal here is that knowledge, wisdom, understanding, philosophy only go so far. That's the big deal. It does help in some sense, because otherwise we wouldn't be reading this book. We would just be doing nothing. It would just be doing things, not learning anything. So it does help in some sense, maybe in more senses than Aristotle would admit in this sense, but it does help in the sense of human beings being rational beings, and even the irrational parts of us somehow being given to reason. You could talk to it, you could teach it, even if it can't understand on its own. And therefore, knowing exactly what to talk about is very helpful. But even more than that, knowing exactly what to talk about will also tell you exactly what to do. And you'll remember that the way in which people achieve good habits or achieve virtues is not by being born with something, not by having like some general tendency towards being good or following rules or things like that, right? All of those things are ways, but they're not what virtue that we're talking about is. But people, human beings, achieve virtue by practicing the actions that would have resulted from those virtues, right? That's the paradox from book 2 or from the Rambam, beginning of chapter 4 here, in the previous series of classes, or one of the previous series of classes that was focused on that. But what this means is that you have to know exactly which action pertains to this. You understand what I'm saying? Because the world of action is divided by areas. The world of action is not the world of like will. If someone says like virtue consists of you having the right wills or the right attitude or the right meaning, like meaning well, how do you say it? Like, he means well.
Intentions.
Then that's a very general thing. Or even if you could talk about temperance, even in the very general sense of something like, one person would say temperance is about loving the soul or the mind and not the body at all. Or it's about keeping control over the body's urges, or the body's thoughts of what is good, things like that. Those would be very general things, which in some sense pertain to the whole soul, to the whole person, as he is, right? And then we wouldn't really need this kind of detail. But if we talk about temperance in a more practical sense, and since we believe that ethics is achieved in practice and not in theory, and not even in like a general like what the Mustafa Salanta thought that Musar was going to be helped by learning Musar. And I think that was mostly a mistake, or very limited use, right? You know what I'm saying? Because the Mustafa Salanta, in his very famous letter called the Geresa Musar, explained his basic program for learning Musar. And it goes sort of, at least the beginning of it goes, that he realized that the problem is that learning doesn't help, right? Study, understanding doesn't help because of this interesting thing that people, basically the problem of, the problem of the weakness of the will, right? What we call the weakness of the will. Problem of people being good or thinking that they're good or knowing what is good and not doing it. And that shows him, in his view, that we can have the correct knowledge, but it doesn't help us become good. We already discussed what we think about this. And therefore, he's going to have a solution. And his solution was emotions, right? What he calls hispilus, right? Limuda musa hispilus, svasayim delkas, with burning lips. How do you say svasayim delkas?
Yeah.
Burning lips. Sounds like something, I don't know what.
Burman?
Burning lips. Like a band name, the Burning Lips. And by that, he theorized that what a person is actually controlled with is what people nowadays call my heart, right? My emotions, my emotional resonance with things, my emotional attraction towards things. And therefore, if he'll be able to move the learning, or at least make this part of learning, which will be not about intellectual learning, but about brainwashing yourself. Not brainwashing yourself, but arousing the kind of emotions in yourself towards what is good and to hate what is bad. Basically, that's what you can do when you learn Musar. Then you will solve this problem, and in that sense, learning Musar will help you become a better person. Now, this is true to a very, very limited extent, as I think the next week people discovered after he opened his Musar house. I think people discovered that you could actually learn Musa with a great espilus and be very emotional and still be a horrible guy. I think that we know those people too. So it's actually not entirely enough to is actually less useful. I don't even know why Rav Sosalante would have thought it was useful. Now I'm thinking, did this solve anything for anyone ever? The problem was that they're learning things too coldly. I wonder. And just in a different, in another step.
Self-dissonance.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I guess we keep on, we're still doing this. We have the inspirational speeches. What's the difference between Stamashir and inspirational speech? It gives you different utters. It inspires you. Turns you on. And then you go home and you were inspired, basically. For the most part.
Well, isn't show the next guy's WhatsApp the next week.
Yeah, you can be on the status. Is that true?
I think it's like a social currency almost, it's like cheap profundity.
Yeah, I wonder. But okay, maybe he didn't mean something that cheap. But still, I wonder if the Chassidim also have the same idea. They have this idea that davening is one of the jobs of davening is to arouse yourself and loving God and hating evil, things like that. And if you read Tanya ever, which everyone should, it's on my reading list. There's a virtual reading list. It's in my hand.
Yeah.
It says you should read that.
That's better than inspirational speeches.
Yeah, it's better, but...
You know you're not getting inspired. You just...
I think people do get inspired. For the next 2 days, do something differently. Yeah, for
you
one day. Sometimes for one day. When you're younger, it works for a day. When you're older, it doesn't even work for 5 minutes.
Okay, but the old inspirational speeches are for older people, not for kids.
No, the kids, they only have inspirational speeches. You go to school, and that's what you hear all day. Maybe that's why it works.
Maybe they don't market it as inspirational.
Yeah, but it's Musar, it's artists, it's what it is, right?
Yeah, but the kinds of inspirational speeches that you see now feel more like indoctrination speeches.
Yeah.
Just rhetoric. Speeches, just like maintaining the status quo. And it should be her old indoctrination speeches.
So rhetoric, like using pathos, what Aristotle called rhetoric.
It's for the people and...
Okay, and that's supposed to work. So then you're talking about it as a fake...
It does work, but not as a self-improvement.
As a fake kind of convincing.
Socialization.
As a fake kind of convincing. instead of as convincing instead of showing or proving or teaching. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but does it actually really
work? Right, it's just
persuasion.
Persuasion, but is it even persuasion? Sometimes I feel
instead
like
of demonstration.
Are you saying it like ultimately you know he's not serious? Like the motivational speaker, like
oh, when they talk about things like
because they
don't
like they
really
don't believe themselves
every year. Oh, come on! Because like,
they don't believe themselves that it works.
Yeah, they don't really believe it. The guy who's listening doesn't believe it either. I think the whole thing is just it's just a so. I think it's all just a social.
No, my inspirational speeches are true and they work. Hello.
Yeah. Sure. No, but I mean that you can tell that maybe because you're like there's a certain sincerity or a claim being made. If you would look at your average WhatsApp status, means. The guy doesn't know what he's. The guy doesn't actually mean what he says.
I think okay. We're not interested in this. In this level of social criticism, we're not even interested. It's bullshit. Everyone that opens my sheet already knows this. We don't have to talk about that. It's a waste of time. What I want to talk about is like the ideal. I'm getting to back to where I'm. But what I would be interesting for me to talk about is like this ideal. Even if it's still not this ideal. Even like I said, if you read Tanya, you see that there's like this ideal that you have like this. What is he called? The Havum Soter. It's like a subconscious love of God, let's say. And then what you do by davening is like you think about it or you play around with your emotions. You use emotional appeals, basically, I guess, to make it alive, to make the love be felt. And then the rest of the Tanya is about how come the moment that I close my Siddur, I'm the same guy. And because of this problem, the Tanya invented all kinds of fancy explanations and justifications of what's going on. And there's more going on there. But what Aristotle, what Rambam will tell you is that you were playing the wrong game to begin with. At least in the sense that as long as we're talking about practical ethics, if you're talking about love of God, there's more complications. But as long as you're talking about like, I learned Musar and I really felt like it's the best thing to learn all day, but then I didn't learn even 1 minute more because of that, or whatever kind of Musar learning yeshiva. What Aristotle would tell you, what Rambam would tell you is that you are talking to the wrong guy, like the wrong part of the soul, right? Who ever convinced you that loving, like you, maybe it's not like thought, okay, so that's knowing is not enough, so maybe loving is going to be enough. Well, it turns out that loving is not enough either. It might be important, just like knowing is important and loving is important. I don't think you can have just like a cold intellectual knowledge that has no interaction in it. I don't think that anyways exists, but that's a different discussion. But like we say, like there's a certain attraction towards the good. You see something as good, okay, but that's still not enough. Because seeing something as the good doesn't make you actually do it. What makes you actually do it is the practice, right? It's the habituation, the habit. So he would tell you, if you want to become a masmid, the solution is to start learning a little. And even though you don't love it, it's the opposite, right? He's working the opposite direction, Aristotle, as he says. Education works from bottom up, not from top down, not from inner to outer, but from outer to inner, right? It works from doing it to starting to love it. It could be that the starting to love it has something added. It's not just like an external thing. You do end up with a real love. But in any case, the problem that we're talking about, the problem of ekrasia, the problem of weakness of the will, the problem of what's called in Musar Moich and Lev, is not really a problem of Moich and Lev, it's a problem of Lev and Maisa. That's what I'm saying. This whole drusha that you Bala Musar, that I'm so against, that whenever I hear someone telling me, but he has a Munna in his head, there's not in his heart, I'd ask him to tell me a story of a Munna that he probably has so worked out in his head, because he claims that his problem is only his heart. That's one thing. And second thing is, that I would tell him that, why do you think that the heart is enough? Like, where did you get that from? Definitely not from the Torah anyways. But why would you think that the heart controls the person in that sense? The heart, when I say the heart, I mean sense of emotions. You could be very emotional about something and then do nothing. I could even have great love for someone or great empathy for someone and then not help him. Empathy doesn't help anything, doesn't do nothing. It might call you to action, it might drive you, it might inspire you to do something. I'm not saying the correct action is the one that is inspired, is the one that has the love in it, but the practice of getting there is not the arousing the emotions, it's the habituating the doing. Is this correct? I think that this is correct. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but
we spoke about this.
But yeah, yeah, I'm repeating it again. Because you gotta habituate yourself.
Yeah.
habituations, I think, really. Still a question of
it's by imitation or by following someone else. The answer is sort of by following someone else, or by following your own mind as someone else, as not without internalization.
Mm-hmm.
Internalization comes after the practice.
Yeah.
in the order of education, not in reality, like in the order of the soul, in the order of being, the love is before the habituation. But in order of practice, habituation is before practice, is before love. Like this is the opposite of any contemporary like chinuch shmos that tells you you have to make your kids love things. You don't make your kids love things. You make them do things, and then by doing them, they start loving them. That doesn't mean you should be a litvak and just do things without loving them, right? It means that you should do it and then love them. I just realized this because I keep on criticizing Rav Salanter for his like imagining this great conflict between the heart and the mind and so on. But now I'm realizing that maybe I did say this enough times, but I framed it, it became clearer to me this week in this sense, that it seems like he forgets, and most people that talk too much forget about this, that the action is in the habituation, the action is not in the feelings. I think so. I do think that like Rav Salanter did realize this, like later Bala Musa, they did do a lot of practical work and try to think of ways to do practical work because of this.
Even have concepts of habituation, Ritzifus and...
Yeah, they figured out all kinds of concepts that are about habituation, yeah. That's like big, that's the bigger practical question. Now, back to where I am. I think this is why particulars are so important, right? This is not what I think, it says Befetish. This is why particulars are so important, but I also think it. What's better, to think it or to know that someone else said it? I think this is why, right? Because when I get into this whole detail, and I'm trying to get it, I think that there's a lot of value in realizing this. And I think that when we talk about it, we learn about it enough, we might actually become better at the areas we're talking about. This is my great hope. And I think that it works. It's not just like, we're not going to end up with just like a big theory of what Aristotle thought about temperance, and what the Rambam thought, and what the Rizal thought, and what the Ravid thought, and so on. We might end up with actually having some of it. And that is because I think that a big problem, a big hindrance to us practicing it is the belief that it's not a practice, and the lack of like very, very specific activities of what we're talking about and what you can do. And since the world of action is the world of particulars, right? The world of mind is the world of absolute universals. The world of love is the world of imaginal universals. So I just made up that term, but you understand what I'm talking about, right? Like you understand the concept of humanity, you love humanity, but like through a story, through a certain, you have empathy, through a kind of story, through a kind of, not a concept, but some kind of like vision or some kind of image that you have of it, maybe sometimes mediated through a specific particular person, but your love is not really directed toward that particular person, right? Like when you watch a movie that makes you emotional, you don't really care about, in general, you don't really care about that guy in the story, but it like turns on this general feeling, right? That's the sense in which theater is universal. That's what Aristotle explains in his talk on the theater, right? About the art. It's not exactly about that person. And that's all not about becoming a good person, because the
so universal through some representation of
yeah. Like, but only you're not focused on the abstract idea, right? on the true existence of the concept, but you're focused on the like image of like the crying child,
right?
But there's the crying child in your head, in your imagination, but it's not that crying child. It's like a symbolization of the crying child, the archetype of the crying child that you're crying about, right? This is that's what emotion does. And I guess in a certain sense we say someone that never gets emotional from watching a sad movie or happy from a happy movie, if there's such a thing nowadays, and so on, is something wrong with him. Like it's part of being a complete human being to have those emotions and have those thoughts. But you still don't get called to be a good person for that, right? Like I think that many people think of themselves as good people because of that, and they're not. Feeling empathy and emotion is not enough, it's not interesting. And what makes you good is that you actually go out and help that crying child, right? Now, problem with that is that that is a particular crying child, and they have a dirty pamper, and there's something blocking your empathy. Like on screen, the big trick with screens is they don't have any smells ever. So they're lacking a certain real reality, like a certain particularity of things. Like they don't have, okay, they don't even have three dimensions. I'm not even talking about that.
Ultimately, but like, every particular is going to be, has some blemish from the universal. Even from the universal example.
Right. It's even worse than the universal example. There's always a reason. You could say something like this. There's always a reason why this guy should not be helped. I know I have great empathy with humanity and with human suffering, but this guy, like, tried to help him. Look, and it's true, by the way, some guys you shouldn't help, even if you have universal empathy. Like, this is a real consideration. But the practice of helping others, or the practice of temperance relative to pleasures, whatever, is going to always be about a particular plate of food or a particular person. And that's where the practice is going to have to be. Right, and it's, even if we want to talk about practice, like we're not, just to be very clear, we're not going all the way down to particular in the sense of the last particular thing, right? Because we are saying that we're habituating a middah, we're habituating a virtue of kindness, or we're talking about temperance, right? You are habituating that as a general tendency in you, right? But we still need to know, if you want to work on that, if you want to get people to have that, if you want to train people that, you're going to have to pick out the exact area of human activity that has to do with. And you can't give these like great wishy-washy or generalizations, feel-good generalizations of like, don't love things of the body. That's not useful at all. We're going to have to get into extreme level of detail and give specific examples, or not only examples, like examples of an habituation of like, do this and don't do that. And that people will actually do this and not do that, and they'll do it enough times, they start to be able to see what makes it good, and be able to know what to do in other situations, and so on. Right. So this is why the extreme specificity here is very useful. And we went through a bunch of things to make it tighter, right? We went through a bunch of things to make it tighter, and some of them conflict with each other. And this is where we're getting stuck a little. I don't know if you people remember where we're getting stuck. Some of the like criteria, the cuts here, seem to conflict with each other, or seem to end up with different sides. Different sides of the cut seem to end up on different sides of the moral discussion, and they flipping between each other. And these are as follows.
And with regards to what specifically is under the subject matter of temperance?
Right. First, the subject matter. So there's two questions, as I said. I think there's two different questions. One is about the subject matter, and the second is about the... The definition or the form of the medium excess and too little itself, right? Those are the two different things, right? There's what it's about and it's what it is. So regarding to what it's about, and I think maybe this might solve the big problem that I've been having, but maybe not, we'll try. So regarding to what it's about, we went through this thing to tighten it all the way to saying it's about pleasures of touch only. Okay, now this distinction, tightening, is somewhat hard to understand at its extreme, right? It's somewhat easy to understand when we're talking in general. We say people, with the cut sort of went, there's all kinds of pleasures. There's pleasures of the soul. That
if dysfunction with regards to sex is about...
I'm getting to... wait, I'm going to get to this. Let me complete the story. So we can see, easily understand the general cuts of like, there's all kinds of pleasures, but it would be a mistake to identify the virtue of temperance with pleasure per se. That's the first important move. And we discussed that this is what solves like the question of like, well, what if being a good person is a pleasure for you? Well, there's a question, a separate question, to what extent the pleasure is what makes it good, or is the pleasure something added to it, but that what makes it good? Those are different questions, but the virtue of temperance is not about that. It's not about pleasure per se. It's about bodily pleasures specifically. So not about all kinds of human pleasures, but about bodily pleasures. So it have to be things that use the body, that are about the body, things like that. And the proof for that is that we don't mean that. I think that's the first proof. Like, how do I know that it's not about non-sensual pleasures? The proof that Aristotle uses, at least, is like linguistic proof, like social proof, like... We don't use it this way. When we say temperance, if you ask someone what it means, again, people can be confused and can be, dumb. You could do the sophistry to them and make them think that they mean all pleasure. But if you sort of realize how we talk about, how we talk about it in literature, how the Muslim books talk about it, and so on, you'll realize that they're almost never talking about non-physical pleasures, non-bodily pleasures. Okay, that's the kind of proof. It doesn't give a reason for it. We don't know why it wouldn't be like, what would split these two things? But I think I did explain it in my way, in the sense that it's not about the question of pleasure per se. That's a different question. There is a different question here, which is the question of bodily pleasures. In other words, it could be that the pleasure isn't really even the issue, although we're talking about it as pleasure. But maybe the I'm not sure about this, but maybe like the word pleasure is even a little bit misleading here, because it's not about the question of pleasure, it's about the question of certain things that are pleasurable. Maybe they're done because they're pleasurable. I guess they're done because they're pleasurable. And I guess that's where the ethics comes in, when you do it because they're pleasurable. Like, as long as it's just done because it's healthy or something like that, maybe it's not even an ethical question. But maybe, maybe yes. Maybe there's always pleasure involved with them, so there's always going to be a question of the pleasure. Something like that. So that got it.
Maybe there's always pleasure involved even on the narrative.
Wait, I'm not getting to that yet. I didn't get to anything about that yet. Okay? There's anything about the narrative versus thing. I'm talking about the bodily pleasure versus soul pleasure first. Then we do, right? Like, even things, like when I say soul pleasure, I don't necessarily mean good soul pleasures, right? Even the pleasure of honor or of talking too much, things like that. Someone that talks too much is not a Baltaiva. He has a different bad middah. There's different bad middahs. It's not useful, like I said, it's not useful to work on both of them in the same way, because you're confusing areas of activity. By talking less with your friends, you're not going to become better at eating less. I think that's very important. Like, there is I guess this is one of the ways in which we see that there is different virtues, right? That being good at one doesn't necessarily make you good at the other. Although there's the problem of the unity of the virtues, it should be, whatever. But in reality, learning...
There's a slight imperfection in one could result in a large discrepancy in the other. Like, meaning, if they're all 100% complete, they...
Yeah, maybe if you would have one in the entirely fully complete way. Exactly. In the full complete way, I think the all virtues imply each other. But in
only at the highest level of actualization.
Yeah, something like that. But as long as they're not fully complete,
they can be,
or at least that's what I'm saying. As long as we're talking about education, right? Instead of talking about having the complete virtue. If we're talking about having a complete virtue, since having a complete virtue means having knowledge, and then in some sense you have to have all practical knowledge, and you have to know what to do in every situation and every kind of thing. But as long as we're talking about habituating yourself, which means you don't entirely have the knowledge yet, then I think there's for sure a difference. And that's why I said I think it's not useful to try to... you're not going to work on...
But
to
have perfect temperance means having perfect knowledge of temperance, which means having...
Right. But to not have it, which means you're working on it, which is where we are for the most part, and which means working on your Tavas Achila, so you're not going to manage working on your Tavas Achila.
This is the question if practical knowledge is the only way to...
Yes. It doesn't matter. Okay. But my point is, maybe it matters, I don't know. What I'm saying is just that if we're talking about working on it, which is, I think, the purpose of this, like, specific... this level of specificity is about being able to click it out because actions happen there, right? Now, of course, you could say the actions happen there, so it's important to talk about in general, because the result of having the virtues is also actions. That's also true. But that's less important than just a question of knowing things correctly. But if we're talking about trying to get to them, well, we have to discover the kinds of activities, the kind of habituations that are going to lead you to have that virtue. And there isn't like general habituations, like habituate yourself to be a good person in the most general sense. What does that even mean? There's only going to be habituations for specific virtues, right? And in that sense, like I said, if you're going to make this mistake, if you're going to think, for example, I think that many people make this mistake. If you know, like, of them, I think most of them are making mistakes like this. Like, people trying to work on themselves are often making this kind of mistake, like, oh, since, what is Tavas Achila? It's like some kind of selfishness. Okay, I'm not saying that's wrong in a very general sense. Therefore, in order to work on my Tavas Achila, I'll work on my selfishness. I'll try to be less selfish in some other way. And this is going to make me eat less. Turns out it doesn't. Again, unless you're talking in like most abstract sense and you become entirely a soul or a mind without a body that doesn't think of itself, but then you're dead. As long as we're not dead, or like a philosopher that's dead or whatever, then it's not going to help, right? And people, I think, get very frustrated from questions like this. I think a big part of the Tanya, for example, like I keep on saying, is answers to these kind of frustrations, which I would say are frustrations because you didn't understand what's going on in the first place. There isn't like a general practice of being a good person. There's specific practices in specific areas. So even like that's the nafkamina. That's why we say, I'm telling you, so maybe it's bad to chase honor too much. Okay. But that's not a problem of temperance. And that's also why you would see people that have very great temperance and too much love of honor and vice versa. Or like speaking too much, is bad. Okay, maybe. But that's not a question of temperance, even though it is of the body, I guess. Somewhat of the body, I don't know exactly. I think he has it as on the side of the things that are not on the body. But in any case, this is not the problem, okay? Now, I think this helps us at least in this sense of like getting rid of the very general question of pleasure, all kinds of other pleasures. Now we have this more specific, even more specific, I think the second step, you'll see, and by me it's page 3, I already ruined my pages here. Anyways, it says, it's in the first chapter here, in chapter 10, where it talks about distinctions within the body, within bodily pleasure. I think that the second step is where we're getting more stuck. So this itself is divided into two steps, okay? The first step being the cutting off the different pleasures of the different senses, okay? So sort of the framework that it's working with here is that there's five senses. Each of the senses have distinct pleasures. And we're thinking which of those senses have pleasures that are relevant to temperance, okay? And we cut off hearing, seeing, and smell, number one. We say, okay, then this is an important step, and I'll try to explain it. We cut off hearing, seeing, and smell. How do we cut off hearing, seeing, and smell? Because we say that, again, someone might have too much pleasure, take too much pleasure in seeing certain things, or might like seeing the wrong things, and so on. But those, that deficiency or that excess, whatever it is not a deficiency that is relevant to temperance. It's a deficiency in some other middah which has to do with what you see. And I want to make a very important, I'll make an important distinction because I think that you're thinking of a problem now. And the same is with hearing, people that love music or listening to the theater or whatever too much, same thing. There might be a correct amount of that, there might be a correct middah of that, but we don't talk about it as intemperant. And the same thing with smell. Now, here, like, there's like two kinds of evidence. There's like evidence of what it says here, not spoken of, right? We don't talk about someone. And I think this is true for us also. We don't say about someone that likes to watch movies too much that is about Tava, except in a second, I'll give you the except. We don't say that. We say something else. There's a Bittel Teure, ich weiß nicht, there's Moshe Vleitzen. There's different Tavairas in that, but not the Avaira being about Tava. Except, so this is the proof that we don't mean that, like we say, we're talking about something else. Except that there's a difference, and when we give this difference, we can bring in the reason, really, why the temperance only pertains to specific senses, and then to specific parts of those senses. And this, the qualification or the complication here is like this. That obvious, if I say, and I'm going to give you a Jewish example, this is what we're doing, translating into Yiddish. So, if I tell you, the eyes have no tava, right? Then there's no question of midas tava in your eyes. So, any Chassidish man is going to come and tell me, what are you talking about? Have you never heard of Shmidas Einayim? Which is about your eyes. And you know that you could read, it's very interesting, and now I'm thinking, I think maybe there's a question here. If you read books like Sefer Charedim, Sefer Charedim is a book, is a kind of Musar, sort of an ethical work, and it's also about mitzvahs. So yeah, of course, he's a Mekibbel that thinks that mitzvahs and ethics are almost the same thing, or different levels of the same thing, whatever the theory is. We've discussed that in some other class, maybe. And one of his like organizations, he's trying to organize the mitzvahs or the midas toivas and the ethics, the different virtues in different ways. And one of his ways of organizing it is to organize it by the different limbs, the different parts of the person that it pertained to. So you would have like mitzvahs satlis ba'ayin, mitzvahs satlis ba'izen, mitzvahs that have to do with your eyes, mitzvahs that have to do with your ears, and so on. Like in Mekabelim, like talking about this, like you're going to be metakin your, yeah, like by based on like a physiological picture of the human, and that this would be a good way of. It's based on a certain, yeah, I guess it's based on a certain physicality. Like we said last week, that the Siddufim people are the ones that love the body the most. So Mekabelim in general think of the body as the important structure to think about a human being.
But as an abstraction, meaning that enchantment.
Well, they think of that as the best source of abstractions, mm-hmm. or the best source of structures. And if, yeah, it's based on the theory that the body is an image of higher of the soul or of higher things. But that's not, it's very interesting because that's not something you would get in the Rambam or in Aristotle in any way. Aristotle would explicitly refuse to associate different like parts of the soul with different parts of the body. He specifically refuses that. The Rambam specifically refuses that in Perek Aleph, based on Aristotle. Because the soul is an abstract thing. The soul doesn't live in space, in a part of the body. It lives in the whole body. The whole soul lives in the whole
lower
body.
Lower, meaning non-intellectuals.
All of the souls. The doesn't soul. Matter. Also the intellectuals.
Why? The form of the body.
All of them are the form of the body. They're different in different senses, in different parts, but right. The parts are not local parts. The parts are not divisible. That's why remember when the Rambam said in Perek Aleph, that the soul has parts, but not parts in the way that the body has parts. What he's implicitly denying here, and this is following Aristotle, is denying what Plato said, that there are three souls and they each belong to different parts of the body. Like Plato said, your intellectual soul is in your mind, in your brain, and your appetitive soul, your want, desiring soul is in your heart, or in your torso area, not necessarily in your heart, and this is in your head, and your how do you call it? Nutritive soul, or what Plato calls this in Aristotle's sense, it would be the intellectual soul, the desiring soul, the nutritive soul. In Plato's sense, it's the intellectual soul, the anger soul, or the thumos, and the appetitive soul. And the third lowest one is in the liver or the kidneys, or in your lower part of your torso, lower part of your body. And this is an image you get in Kabbalah a lot, because Kabbalah are Platonists. And they all follow Plato saying, Meich Lev Kovet, if you've read Kabbalah, you've come across that three-level image of the body, where you have this, like the highest level of the soul, or the intellectual soul in your mind, Chabad, and your intermediate soul, or what Plato calls anger, and Kabbalah are not entirely sure how to read it always, because nobody nowadays understands what Thumos is. So, but Chagat is in the higher part of your body, in your heart area. And then Nahi, or your liver or kidneys, I'm not sure which, or maybe both, or it's around that area, are about the appetite, like the lower desires of the soul, of the person. That's something that Plato would say, and Aristotle explicitly denies this, and says that a soul is not something that belongs to a specific body part. Maybe it might even be Platonists that deny it and explain that Plato only meant that as a mussel, not literal, because of this. Because of this idea that the soul is a form and something, like that Aristotle would say, there are three souls, but all of them are in all of the body. So it's not correct to say the neshama b'mayach or something like that, or the mayach b'mayach. The mayach is in everywhere. Okay, if you read Arizal, you'll find out that it's correct also this way. Okay, I don't know why I'm getting into Kabbalah. What was my point? I forgot. Oh, my point is, I was thinking about like this way of structuring it. So one way, so you see when Aristotle talks about senses, this is what he talks about. He's not talking about limbs. This is very interesting. It's like you can get like a Mekubal or a Chassidish Sefer talking about like something like, you know, how do you attack in Riyas Asiris, the Pgama in Ayin? Like you've sinned in your eyes, so the logic, or there's some kind of poetic logic at least that says, therefore, you should do a mitzvah with your eyes. So instead of looking at women, you should look at the Shabbos lecht or something. That would be the solution. And things like that, right? Or you should cry. And that would be the solution. Now, that's a symbolic way of thinking. I don't know if it's also how things actually work in the sense of like the science of what the human being is. And let me tell you why Aristotle would deny that there are sins, or there are sins of the appetite, there are sins of pleasure in the eyes. Because he says like this, and I think this is important, now that I'm thinking about it this way, I think this is an important distinction that we should think of. I should ask like the Talmud Chachamim if they agree with my pshat. He says like this, an animal, and this is where we come in, we bring in animals. An animal, we can say, we could talk about a cow, or, I don't know, a lion. The cow is not doesn't eat other animals. Like, you could talk about a lion seeing a cow or whatever lions eat, and being very happy that he saw it, right? Because he's gonna have lunch today, right? But does the lion love the seeing? Does the lion like the seeing, the vision of cows? And the way that people that watch beautiful movies or look at beautiful sights love the sight of it? Or I'll give you, exactly good. Or I'll give you maybe lions, but I'm not, again, whenever we do animals.
Someone could like look at a woman with the sole intention of.
Very good. So that's the exact point. So, for example, the same thing, let's talk about the sense of smell. When someone that loves food very much smells the food that he loves, or the woman that he loves, right? Someone that loves the woman very much, and he is all excited and all aroused with this like love of the food that he smelled, is that a pleasure of the sense of smell?
With anticipation of eating it, meaning?
Exactly. So Rav Aristotle Tainas, that is not a pleasure of the sense of smell. Your pleasure is of the sense of taste or touch or taste, whatever. Happens. It's incidentally mediated by the sense of smell. What lets you know that there is a piece of food here to be eaten is your sense of smell or your sense of sight or your hearing. You know, if you hear kol b'sheirv, whatever, right? That is not a sin. That is not a wrong pleasure in the sense of sense, smell, or hearing, or. Or, how do you call it? Or what was the third one? Or seeing, right? It's using this sense of sight, and what you're loving, like you said, what you're loving is what your pleasure is, your anticipation, or your, let's see, what is words
are. How does one have pleasure in just the sense of smell?
There are pleasures. Well, if you just smell besamim, like when you smell besamim on Matzah Shabbos, you're not enjoying that maybe this is reminding you of the good kugel that you put at besamim. We don't put, I don't know, maybe you do. But you understand? That would be the difference between when someone watches a beautiful movie or sees a beautiful painting, that's a pleasure of the sense of sight itself. It's not because it reminds him of something or because it
anticipation for something.
Right, there are such pleasures, of course. Like that's the difference between art and like low art, right? Like. If someone looks at pictures of his wedding and just to remind himself how much he loves his wife or how he used to love her and now he stopped loving her, so it was good times, I don't know. Or like how geschmack his wedding was, that's not pleasure of the sense of sight. That's a pleasure of memory, of, you know, imagining your past or your future or something. Right? Like if you're looking at pictures of your children or of your grandchildren and you have nachas, that's not a pleasure of the sense of sight. It's a pleasure in your children. Mediated through sight, yeah. If you'd be blind, you wouldn't be able to have it that way. But you could have, a blind person could also have the same pleasure that person that sees his picture of his grandchildren has, just by hearing of it. It's interchangeable, right? It's not pleasures of that sense. Or in the correct way, right? It's, he would call it accidentally pleasures of the sense of sense. It's using the sense of sight.
It's not the same thing as watching fireworks.
Right, exactly. Watching fireworks, it's definitely not a pleasure of your hearing, because it sounds like people bombing you.
Though.
But it looks nice.
Could there be a sense of pleasure of like memory when you eat something? Because
yeah,
this
yeah.
is what I used to.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. But then that would be like a secondary sense of touch memory.
So they can work with everything.
This same particular theory works for everything.
Where it terminates.
Where it doesn't work, no, where it doesn't work, like I'm saying, if someone likes good smells, people, we're not everyone is into it, but like someone likes good
like
smells,
it.
Yeah, you're into it. If someone likes good smells, and like buys perfumes, not because like there's two ways in which people put on perfume, right? One way is just to attract women, or vice versa, to attract men. That's not the.
Obviously, when you like it a lot, you buy the perfumes
not,
that other people don't like.
Okay, but that's an eye that you like the smell and not the people. It's not
the
shadai.
You can ask to please stop wearing the one that smells
that's
like
that's not
the shadai. And
But that's the raya, that it's about the love of that.
That's right.
So if someone puts on perfume just to attract other people, they're not a Yiddish is a feinschmecker, right? They're not a lover of sense of smell. They're a lover of other people. This is just a way to attract people because maybe the sense of smell has some connection with arousal. So I don't know. But it's just association that people have. It works just as like a picture or just like a voice clip or anything like that. If you put on the perfume or you put the besum kovet shabbos for the smell itself, then you're enjoying the sense of smell. And the same thing for sight and for hearing, right? If you like music because you hear the person singing on it, or it reminds you of something, right? So that's the sense in which we're saying that there is no pleasures of sight, seeing, and smell do not pertain to temperance. Only incidentally, they incidentally could. There could be sights that you shouldn't see because they cause intemperate actions or thoughts, even, I don't know. But those will not be called problems of the sense of sight. This is why I was thinking that maybe the Charedim or all these kind of Chassidish Torahs are wrong when they say that Riyas Asiris, or looking at things that you shouldn't look at, or that you shouldn't take too much pleasure in, or so on, is a problem of the sense of sight. Because it's only incidentally a problem of the sense of sight. In other words, the tikkun of Riyas Asiris is just not in doing things. It's not in the sight. Right. You're not putting in your eyes. Again, there might be a way in which that's true. I'm just saying a comment. I don't know if this is called a'or. I don't know if... I'm just saying there's a different way of thinking here. Right?
Subjugating your eyes is an instrument to your body. It's probably not...
Yeah, maybe that's... Right? Again, that's maybe in itself a problem. Or maybe not. Or maybe... Like, what I'm saying is, if... Well, I'll tell you what the nafkamina like lalacha would be, although might probably not practical, right? The nafkamina lalacha would be that there isn't... there's actually a mitzvah that says... A lalacha that says... There's about both of these things, right? About I don't know about hearing. I wonder. There's no brachas on hearing. So weird. Why don't we have to see? There's brachas on. I was thinking about this. So I was traveling and I was thinking about. I went to this beautiful waterfall, and I was thinking of this question: if there's like some tzaddik that would say you shouldn't look at the waterfall too much because it's tam tavas adam hazah, because the waterfall is not adam hazah, right? Isn't it? I think. And I was thinking about this shtickle Torah, and I was thinking that there's a few halachas that I was thinking are associated with this. I think I mentioned some of in the next part I mentioned some halachas. But for example, and I, like if I'm going to write my Yiddish version of this, I'll bring these ra'as. So one ra'ah is that there's halacha kol ma'ariv erech en b'mishem me'ilah. So me'ilah is when you're enjoy when you take something away from Hekdash, from the Samigdash or something like that. And then you have to pay back Kiran V'chaymash V'chadayim and Yerayverim. And the halacha is that from hearing the beautiful songs of the Kehanim, or smelling the Ketores, or seeing the Beis HaMikdash or something that is beautiful, you're not Mo'el. And the reasoning, I think, is just that it doesn't take anything away from anything. Right? It's not like Kolna No, it's things that, right? Tzeren Evzeh Lechoseh, right? But the point that also, there's a different point that people say is sometimes like, otherwise it would be very weird. Like, you wouldn't be allowed to look at the Beis HaMikdash because you're enjoying the beauty of it for your own sake, and like, it's supposed to be only for God. Like, it doesn't work that way. Okay, that's a question. It is a question. Like, are you allowed to enjoy the, right? The backwards question of the loving your tefillin. Are you allowed to love your tefillin? It's just lehanes, isn't it? Right? So like, right, but so the answer is that lehanes has these different senses. Lehanes, there's the kind of anoa from chishamishash, what we're talking about now, and there's the kind of hanoah of kol ma'ariv erech, which are not considered hanoah, or not considered me'ila, at least not called me'ila, because it's not, he would, maybe the halacha would say because it's not taking anything, but I would say because it's not a kind of pleasure, that it's a different kind of, I'm just showing that it's a different kind of thing. The sight, these three senses are different, they're also distant senses, right? The big, like a physiological difference is that we see, hear, and smell things from at a distance, but we don't touch or taste anything without physical touch.
Well, they're closer. A lot of close touch is ultimately what's going to impact the world in ways that...
Yeah, these things are connected, I'm saying. All these things are connected, these differences. But then, so what was I thinking? I forgot what I wanted to say. So I was thinking about this difference, right? So then that's one halacha. Then one ra'ay that I thought. Then there's a question like this. There's a question both about smell and about sight, right? So like I said, there isn't, so there's Birchas Hanehen, that's what I started talking about, Me'ilah. And then there's Birchas Hanehen, right? For us, La'adam Lehenen is Ma'il Mazeb Le'Bracha. Without, enjoy, or and I think Hanoah has, implies not only enjoying, but a certain kind of enjoying, when, at least in this context. Birchas Hanehen is not about every time, everything you enjoy. Because explicitly in the Gemara and in the Mefarshim, when you make a bracha like Shechayonu or something, or you see your friend that you didn't see for a long time, you say a bracha, that's not called Birchas Hanehen, although you enjoy it. It's, we call it Birchas Hashvach.
Interesting, you make a bracha on smiles.
Wait, we get, but we have a separate makar for it. Wait, that's what I'm talking about. This. If you learn Zach, the brachas, you'll see that it's not called the Birchas Hanehen either. It, sometimes it is called that, but there's a special gemara that says that we need a different makar because it's not the same, because what late. But first, let me talk about the morgen, like the bigger split, right? For things that are a great pleasure, you have to take great pleasure in, you know, in, I don't know, having a baby or seeing your friend. We don't call this Birchas Hanehen. Why? Because you didn't. There's some when we say the word Hanoah, which has some correspondence at least with the word pleasure here. It's in the same area, although I don't know if it's the same exact meaning.
Doesn't it mean benefit?
Yeah, it could mean benefit, but it has to be positive benefit, right? There's a,
right.
Which is kind of pleasure, or kind of this kind
I mean,
of pleasure.
It could mean pleasure, but it could mean
right. But that's what I'm saying. Like when we talk about Hanoah in the sense of benefit, we're talking about physics. We're basically talking only about the sense of touch kind of benefits. And Birchas Hanehen is for sure only about the sense of touch. Or, touch and taste. As well. We'll get to the question between touch and taste in the next
it's
class.
It's about me not having to...
So I'm telling you, when you see a beautiful scenery, you make a bracha, and we call it Birchas Hashevach. We don't call it Birchas Hanehen. Right? You say, oh, it's a massive pleasure on seeing something beautiful.
Yeah, but there's no benefit you get out of that.
What do you mean? It's the pleasure that's the benefit. So do you think? There's a different kind of pleasure. So call it whatever you want. I think it's getting at the same difference. Call it that's a it's a pleasure without benefit. Well, what do you mean it's not benefit? I'm loving it. I'm happy. It makes me happy. It makes me content. I don't know
what
whatever pleasure is.
What I'm trying to say is that benefit is really an intrinsic type of value. Like it's a value to you that
it's a value
I
to see beautiful
I don't
things.
Need to eat because
okay.
I just ate. Right?
Okay, so there's another thing that
not
doesn't
pleasure.
Have so much to do with
it's
a lack.
A,
I don't know to what extent that's true, by the way. People have a need to see beautiful things, and if you don't go a few months without seeing anything beautiful, you become depressed. I don't know.
Yeah, but that's not... That,
why
you
not?
You can't call that a benefit.
Why? Because too fuzzy?
Because most people don't need that.
Everyone needs... By the way, it's not true. Everyone needs that. Anyone that lives... Halacha lamayis. Anyone that never hasn't seen a beautiful thing, even a beautiful person, right? A beautiful thing for a few months, should fast go and see a beautiful thing. Tzak halacha. It says in the Rambam, I'm going to talk to him later, by the way. The fetish.
I hear the Rambam says
because you don't need the Rambam because like you're depressed. Well, like beautiful things, there are a lot of levels of beautiful things. Like there's degrees of beauty, but like your person can't live without beauty. I don't think that's true. You could have beautiful thoughts and see them in your mind. I'm not saying you have to like go travel to somewhere or watch something, but I do think so. You're right that there's a difference. I'm saying all these things are way different ways of getting. I'm showing you that it's accepted that there's these differences. Like
but
there's
today maybe we're so and, depressed because all beauty has been privatized and
yeah, in some way, in some sense. That's why you have to make a beautiful shul. We have to make pretty beautiful room here. It helps me a lot. Mm-hmm. It used to be more depressing here when it was the garage door.
Yeah, yeah. No I definitely agree.
It's for sure worth the investment.
Yes.
I'm looking to make it more beautiful. I'll think of some art and something.
Well, we have a...
Yeah, I have that wall. I have to just hire a commissioner artist to do something.
You think if we would have continued, it would have been depressing?
Yeah.
Because then we don't see beautiful...
Responses. No, you're less...
Less inspired. It's less...
Yeah.
I don't think it would have been depressing because we still get...
You would have to compensate with something else. Okay. I'm not saying you're going to die of
depression. You see, you don't need a beautiful...
You do need. You see, it's not true.
That's
you
why
see?
We did it.
This is why I disagree with, like, I know, this is also, we're going to get to this, I guess, next time, I don't know, whenever I get to it. Like, this is where my disagreement with, like, the two from people is, that everyone recognizes food and sex as human needs, and they don't recognize the higher needs, which are actually big, greater needs. Like, you could be like a big Bnei Brak Efrim that never saw a beautiful thing, and doesn't care about anything being beautiful, and he has a very broken soul because of that. Although, and he tells you, what do you mean, eat? I have to eat. Instead, that's worse, because you have to eat, and now we're going to get back. You have to be just like an animal has to eat. And this was gives us a criteria here, also explanation, right? So Aristotle says, besides for people not talking about food, vision and hearing and smell as being dissipated, as being baltaiva, we also can explain this. Because remember, or when you remember it, but this is where we get to it, you remember that one of the big things with human beings is that it should be human and not animal. Or at least focus, or at least find his unique good and the ways in which he is unique. Just like everything, we're not going to repeat that theory. This is the very, very important Ergon theory, right? From Book 1, Chapter 7, which the Rambam repeats in Nagdamot Perusha Mishnah. And anyways, the function argument. So, now, therefore, animals have the sense of touch. All animals enjoy food and sex. All animals that have the sense of touch, okay? Which is, they're interesting, the animals that we're talking about. Maybe even all animals, but at least, you know, the big animals, mammals. I don't know. But no animals, or at least we don't talk about animals. Again, we, you know, whenever we say animals don't, someone's going to come and find me an article somewhere that says the animals do. We don't care about those kinds of questions. But no animals enjoy seeing beautiful things or hearing beautiful things or smelling beautiful things. Animals do get aroused by these senses, the ones that have it, right? Dogs have better sense of smell than humans. But no dog buys perfume. Did you ever notice a dog buying perfume? You could trick a dog with certain perfumes. But that's because it reminds him of the thing that the smell, he thinks that that's...
I would try showing the dog a smell, it wasn't
impressive. You're not interested? No, that's because you're a perfume. You know, you try with people also, they're not impressed.
That's true.
So you're saying by animals, smell animals, only...
Right, animals, so this exactly shows you. Animals could work, smell, they smell, and he's going to chase his food by the smell, or he's going to chase his woman, his you know, female by the smell, and so on. But he will not enjoy the sense of smell in itself. And this is what shows us exactly this distinction. That to enjoy the taste or the touch of the food, that's the animalistic thing, and that's why this is the worst kind of thing, because that makes it, that is where people are just like animals. To enjoy the smell in itself is a human thing. But of course, animals also have smell, but animals, they do have sense of smell, and they even enjoy it. It seems like they enjoy it, but we don't say that the lion saw a beautiful zebra walking in the grass, and it was like, why, my eyes are feeling good now. No, it's my stomach is feeling good now because it hopes that's going to have a meal, right? It's a very different kind of pleasure. And that is very important distinction between in which sense the eyes and things like that have pleasure,
so that
and
makes
animals can have
so
when
the
they
wants for food
when they act that way?
The opposite, right. If you only use, like, not only use, the when we say,
the
that's why
the
we're saying that the question of temperance is a question of the sense of touch. Or the other three senses when they're used for that.
Oriented towards the
cultivation
in the sense
as a tool for that, right? Being like meaning that, right? That's the difference, the chilek, that the second chilek that we make. I think this is a very important thing, and this already gives us, like, not only we don't call it that way, like, you're not just saying, oh, we don't say that someone who watches movies is a baltaiva. Well, some people watch movies that's goes back to, we'll get to this later, right? It goes back to different kinds of movies, right? There's kinds of movies that are not interesting to watch. They're actually ugly. The only reason you watch them is to arouse certain pleasures or something like that, certain bodily pleasures. And those are not, it's not a shaylah for me to say na'am. You see, that's my chiddush. Oh, now I have to go back to the halacha. It's a shaylah, whatever. It's hirir masirim or maisim masirim or whatever it is. It's not a question of the sight. Because your sight, your eyes are just serving the body in this sense. That's why I'm going back to my heter halacha that I'm based on this. So in the same sense, I forgot to finish this halacha thing.
In the opposite sense, but if you're seeing the movie for the pleasure of
right, that, I'm going to get if it would have beauty.
That's what you're saying.
I'm not saying that's cool. I'm not making that claim. I'm saying that belongs to that belongs to a different question.
Didn't get to what
right, right. No, we didn't. We didn't. It's already 11 o'clock. Hello, can go forever. What I'm saying is, and this is where I want to complete the thing by saying the other side, right? Then I said there's a halacha that says you make sabichas and hanan, then there's bichas areach, which is not bichas and hanan, or it's, I think in the Rambam says it's a kind of bichas and hanan, but it's, in the Gemara it says that it's a different, it needs a different source, because the Gemara explicitly calls it this way, I think, and this Gemara is ripped of Aristotle or the opposite, I don't know, like, Rambam is the same words, that smell is something that the soul or the breath enjoys and not the body. So this is literally the difference between pleasures of the body and pleasures of the not body. Even smell is not a pleasure of the body. And when you say body, we mean obviously touch, right? Because smell is not a divine, it's not a spiritual thing, right? The Gemara is not saying that smell is spiritual. What the Gemara is saying, or intellectual, or something like that. What the Gemara is saying is that it's not of the body, right? and the body in the same in the way that there's a difference between kol ma'ariv ve'ri'ach and eating or drinking or something like that. Now, then there's other brachas that we call them brachas ari'iyah, right? For example, perek haroya, right? Sometimes called brachas shvach in a general sense, but blessings on the eye. Now, there's also brachas hashmiyah, by the way, but they're not really about hearing. I wonder about this question. Now I've heard of a new question. So there's famously...
It's on knowledge, meaning, right?
Right. So there's famously no bracha on the pleasure of sex, for nobody knows why. There might be a bracha in like Birchas Nisun and Birchas Edison, but anyways, that's one question. There's basically only brachas on food. Food and smell. Birchas Anehen. But there should have been one for sexual pleasures. We don't know why. Maybe because it's like considered too low or something like that. We don't really know. What?
Mood killer?
Yeah, maybe because it's a mood killer. We don't know. No, it doesn't have to be. No, it could be. I don't know what's so funny. It's a theoretical reason. You know, the Baal Shem Tov said there's no bracha on mitzvahs of tzedakah. There's generally no bracha on mitzvahs of tzedakah l'chaveri, but that's the... because by the time you're going to be finished taking out your gatel and giving the bracha, the poor person's going to be dead, you know? Like, you can't. Just give him the money and move on. So, yeah, it's hard to say. Yeah, brachas come with a certain situation. But anyways, in brachas anehen, then there's brachas ari'iyah, which aren't seen. So now I'm realizing that there's brachas hashmiya, like shmiyas toivas. If you hear good news or something, you make a bracha, or bad news, you make a bracha. But that's not on the pleasure of hearing. So why? I have to ask the rabbis, why didn't Chacham make a bracha for hearing beautiful music? Like, Shabbat, Koil Yafek.
Are you not allowed to listen to music?
I don't know. You're not allowed to listen to music, sir.
Why?
No, it's actually hard, but... No, depending on the content of the music. I don't agree.
The only bracha is Shmiyah.
Depending on the content. But the content, yeah.
Shmiyah is
Shefer,
really, no?
Bracha Shmiyah is about knowledge, right? It's like about, like you said, it's not about knowledge, like news.
Shefer is only exception.
Shmoyes Toivus means good news, right?
Yeah, which you can technically receive through any form of media.
Right, it's not about the hearing. It's not about the sense of hearing.
It's only one that you make. I mean, even that's
Lishmaya, yeah, it's a mitzvah. Megillah, maybe. I'll make a Megillah. Lishmaya, Megillah. Whatever. But there are many, many, many brachas on sight. And there's... So, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to use this to show, to illustrate this difference. So, there's for seeing beautiful things, you make a bracha, and it's a kind of brachas anehen. We call it brachas hashvach, but I think it's like for seeing something beautiful, you say, you know, God is great, He makes beautiful things. So there's a mass brach or shekach alei ba'elama shabara and so on, including beautiful women. And it says in Farish and the Gemara and the Rambam, if you see a beautiful woman, you have to make a bracha, baruch shekach alei ba'elama. Now, of course, most people don't do this because they feel weird. No, and most people don't do this.
Also, potential mood
call. Most people don't do this because of this difference. Because then there's like, hey, how do you allow to see a beautiful woman? Only betos, then when you make the bracha, like the keren zilvus, it says. What does that even mean? So the answer is that there's a difference between enjoying beauty, which is a pleasure of the sense of sight, and enjoying a woman in the same way an animal would enjoy the sight of a woman, right? Maybe most people don't.
9.9%.
Yeah, so maybe this is the problem. Maybe human beings have a hard time separating these two things when it comes to human women. I don't know. Like, imagine you would be. I could give you a way of separating it. Imagine you'd be very old or in some kind of, you know, asexual person or an asexual state where you don't have any sexual demand, then you still can appreciate the beauty.
True.
If you're a heterosexual person, you could still enjoy a beautiful person of your same kind. Nothing, just like you see a beautiful thing, if you appreciate beauty. And you have to make a bracha for that. That's number one.
What you're saying, amen to amen?
Yeah, why not? It doesn't say only beautiful women. Maybe men are not beautiful. It says
women.
Like Gemara that...
No, you said the
women. Humans. Priyas Toivas. Yeah, it doesn't say women. There's also one explicitly in the stories and stuff, but no. Of course. Or the same discussion is regarding smell. So the Rama made up a halacha that you don't make a bracha on b'sama mishala erva. Perfumes that a woman is wearing, or maybe not clearly a woman, maybe a woman that is asura lecha, a woman that you're not allowed to marry, then you shouldn't make a bracha. The Rambam sort of invented this halacha, or maybe he had a source for it. It doesn't really say anywhere. But
even if you smell the smell of the sun coming over the person.
Yeah. So if theoretically, so there's a question. There's other the other discussion of lochus b'samim, but theoretically, if there's a derech, if it has an ikar,
if it's, if they don't make a at least they have to make minhag b'samim.
Exactly. You have to make whatever some. If there's like a real, if it's just like a spray, I'm not sure. But if you like put some oil or something.
No, it all has oils.
Yeah, but I don't know how much is considered like a mamash. Like you just spray a little bit, and I don't know. It's still the air. How do you know it's even there?
Spray a lot. So there's no
something. Okay. So, anyways, like then you would have to make a bracha according to the ikra halacha. Again, this is, by the way, this is something that people just don't do for no reason. I don't know why. This is my not my halacha here, but like. We just stopped doing a lot of brachas for no reason. Like, pretend not to enjoy good smells. Like, I don't know why.
Next week I'll just show on top.
I don't listen to this. My own, like, I claim that when you make your, like, since I got my new coffee thing, like, if you grind fresh coffee, you should make a bracha, I don't know, Beirimine or some, Ratsi or some, I don't know where it grows the coffee. Anyways, it grows on a tree, right? Anyways.
No, it's pods in the ground. Is that the cow pods that grow on the ground?
Those are the curry things you mean. They grow in the supermarket.
Fuck the cops.
No, anyways. So you make a bracha. Anyways, so again, there's this difficulty of separating these things so for the same reason. Like, if you're only enjoying the attraction or something like that, then you're not enjoying the sight, then you can't make a bracha sari or a bracha sariach. And the Rama might mean because it's asr, but I think that's the isr. If there would be a way of separating these things entirely, then there would be a separate pleasure for the smell itself or for the sight itself that has nothing to do with the rest of the story. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that's my, I guess that's enough for today. Chazak u baruch.